the guys, this is amazing. Big great white here on the water. You can see the big great white there, and they come and they hunt the great white. This is so special, guys.
I saw orcas breaching the water, and these orcas were hunting something. It was actually a great white. I was gobsmacked. I just couldn't believe what I saw. There was no fear in the orcas whatsoever. That was just absolutely mind-boggling.
Hi, I'm Jan Renner, founder of Roaring Earth.
And I'm science reporter Kate Morgan.
In each episode of the Roaring Earth podcast, our contributing reporters explore mysteries of the animal world and the science behind amazing wildlife interactions, captured on video by people like you.
You just heard from Donovan Smith, who sent in the amazing clip he captured. It featured rare footage of two orcas, otherwise known as killer whales, pursuing a huge great white shark. Donovan was leading a boat tour just off the coast of South Africa in January of 2020.
This video was actually one of the most popular ever on Roaring Earth. It generated millions of views and thousands of comments and questions. It seems what had Donovan gobsmacked was equally astonishing to our audience. How could something, anything, eviscerate the most feared creature of the sea, the great white shark? So we asked Kate to dive in deeper and learn more about this unexpected relationship between these underwater giants. And it turns out, what Donovan witnessed, while surprising, was hardly a once-in-a-lifetime event. So here is the unexpected story of killer whales versus great white sharks.
In 2017, the remains of five great white sharks washed up on the shores of Hansbaai, a fishing town on the Atlantic coast of South Africa. Among the dead was a huge female that measured nearly 16 feet long.
It was a very rare occurrence to see five white sharks dead in a short period of time within the same area.
That's Dr. Sarah Andriotti. She's a marine biologist with the University of Stellenbosch in South Africa and an expert on white sharks. Autopsies, or necropsies, as they're called in the animal world, revealed that the sharks had all met a violent end. And get this, all five victims were missing their livers, which had been extracted from their bodies with near-surgical precision. That and some other telltale clues led the investigators to their suspects. I know, it sounds like a serial killer story.
And they were able to match it up and look at tooth marks on them and tell that it was killer whales. And specifically, there'd been two killer whales seen regularly. One's named Port and one's named Starboard.
Elisa Schulman-Janiger, a whale researcher at the Natural History Museum of Los Angeles County, explains that the whales got those nicknames because they each had an unusually floppy dorsal fin. That's the big fin on top of the whale's body. One drooped to the left and the other to the right, Port and Starboard, which made them pretty unmistakable.
Very likely they're related, or they potentially could be two orphan males who have made their own little family, but they were hunting together.
And they weren't just hunting white sharks. Back in 2015, sharks of another species met their demise just 45 miles away in Falls Bay on the coast of Cape Town. Those attacks were eerily similar.
Multiple seven-gill sharks were found with their livers almost surgically removed.
Again with the livers. After analyzing the evidence recorded at the scene, scientists from South Africa's Cape Research Center eventually pointed the finger at the same culprits, Port and Starboard.
And they believe that these two killer whales are likely responsible for the attacks on probably all or at least most of these sharks.
That was surprising, because Sarah Andriotti and her team had seen killer whales peacefully coexisting with sharks in these coastal waters for years, with no recorded shark murders.
It was not a rare occurrence to see white shark and killer whale in the same area. Historically, these areas in South Africa were used to be called white shark capital of the world. And together with white shark, we've also seen a killer whale, you know, orca whale, coming in this area thanks to how rich these waters are of nutrient that can support the presence of such large predators.
The whales were only seen eating marine mammals, not sharks, which are fish. No one had observed whales actually hunting sharks there before. It wasn't until 2015 that attacks started to occur in Falls Bay and other areas along the coast. And it appears it's not just port and starboard. Unlike our dynamic duo, the killer whales that Donovan Smith spotted had upright dorsal fins, so they must have been a different pair. It turns out port, starboard, and the killer whales in Donovan's clip were probably from a totally different population than the ones that had existed side by side with sharks in Falls Bay before 2015. The shark-eating whales may have recently arrived from the open ocean.
There's different populations of killer whales all over the world, and these populations have different cultures, and they have prey specialties in many cases. Some are specialists, some are generalists. The mammal eaters work in groups led by reproductive females, and they hunt silently, looking for dolphin, sea lions, perhaps a gray whale calf. The southern resident killer whales, British Columbia, they specialize in salmon, particularly Chinook salmon. That's about 85% of their diet.
These two types of killer whales stick close to the coast. But a third type of killer whale targets sharks for dinner, including the biggest great whites. Little has been known about this type until recently, because they mainly live out in the open ocean. So that's what made Donovan Smith's sighting so unusual. But just because we've only recently seen it doesn't mean whales haven't been attacking sharks, according to Elisa Schulman-Janiger.
Killer whales can hunt them underwater, eat them underwater, and people would never observe it. So actually, observations of killer whales attacking and feeding on sharks is relatively recent, although I'm sure it's been happening for a very long time.
Now that it's happening closer to shore, where scientists can observe the behavior, they've got some ideas about how these attacks go down. This is where things get a little graphic. Killer whales have been documented working together to force sharks to the water's surface using their powerful tail fins. Eventually, they'll use those tail fins to flip the shark on its back and hold it there. That's a big problem for the shark. To breathe, sharks have to keep moving and keep water flowing over their gills. That's how they get oxygen. Upside down, they're susceptible to something called tonic immobility. If they can't move, they can't breathe. As it drowns, each whale grabs a pectoral fin, playing a bloody game of tug of war until the shark's belly splits open. Then they go for the liver, squeezing it out, as one scientist so helpfully put it, like a tube of toothpaste. Which brings us back to the livers. A missing liver in a shark is a big deal, and I mean literally big.
A liver could take up one-third the weight of a shark.
Even an average-sized great white weighs in at about 1,800 pounds. Do the math, and you could have 600 pounds of liver to chop. Whichever way you slice it, that's a lot of pate.
So it's a very large organ that the killer whales can target. It's very high in fats, very nutritious, very oily. So they are a prime resource for these fats.
Fats that provide energy and help maintain the whale's thick layer of blubber. A shark liver can keep the whales going in the open ocean for months. Of course, the sharks would probably rather keep their livers. Like most animals, they depend on it to filter toxins out of the blood and to aid digestion. But these giant shark livers also serve another function, keeping them afloat. Most other fish have what's called a swim bladder, a pocket-shaped organ that holds just the right amount of gas to keep them buoyant in the water. But sharks use their liver instead. It's full of an oil called squalene, which is lighter than the water around it. And that oil is a delicious, nutritious treat for orcas. And the way the whales hone in on this delicacy is really remarkable, because it's the same way your doctor looks at your liver.
They see with sound. They can look inside a shark using their sonar.
Just like a medical ultrasound, they send sound waves into the body. But in whales, it's called echolocation, and the sound they use is a series of clicks. The sound that's reflected back gives them important information. The only thing missing is the pretty pictures. In fact, killer whales are so good at echolocation, it can seem a bit uncanny.
They could look inside a person, for example. They've gone up to women who are pregnant and come over and watch the baby because they are basically doing ultrasounds.
Don't worry, though. Killer whales aren't interested in our livers.
Nobody, not one person in the history of people, has been known to be killed by a killer whale out in the wild.
But people are a part of this story. More when we come back.
Hi, I'm Jan Renner of Roaring Earth. Before the break, we took a deep dive into Donovan Smith's video of some remarkable animal behavior. Killer whales hunting a great white shark, presumably to eat its liver. As rare and unusual as this sighting was, the experts say it's probably been happening for a long time, just way out in the open ocean. But Donovan's video was captured just a few miles offshore. So what's changed that has brought these shark-eating whales closer to where we are? Take it away, Kate.
The scientists have their theories. Like so many of our problems, it's caused by the behavior of the world's most destructive apex predator. Us.
We know there is a lot of overfishing happening. There is a lot of poaching going on.
Out at sea, this has caused declines in fish populations, including the sharks that offshore killer whales like to eat.
It's always humans. We are actually the top predator of the ocean, but we are not supposed to be there, and yet we are damaging it more than any other predator.
The lack of their preferred food may have driven the offshore killer whales to seek their fortunes closer to the coast. Like in Falls Bay, where they encountered seven gills and great white sharks, and in the Farallon Islands, 32 miles off San Francisco, where Elisa Schulman-Janiger says attacks were documented as early as 1997. As for the sharks that survive killer whale attacks, they hightail it out of there fast.
After a documented attack, sharks from that species have disappeared. The Farallon Islands, from the day of that attack in October 1997, all the white sharks disappeared for the rest of the season.
But it doesn't even take aggression to make the sharks leave. A paper published in 2019 by researchers at the Monterey Bay Aquarium suggests that the mere presence of killer whales on shark hunting grounds is enough for them to flee the area. Scientists can sometimes figure out where they go by tagging them and tracking their movements across the ocean.
For example, in 2000, when there was an attack, we believe, on a great white in Farallons, there was a white shark named Tipfin who was tagged. And from the hour of that attack in 2000, he dove down and swam straight to Hawaii without stopping. And all the other white sharks disappeared too. The same thing happened off South Africa. So there's something going on. Somehow that word gets around to the sharks in the area that this is probably not a good place to be hanging out right now. How exactly do they know it's time to leave? What signal is given? Is it a chemical signal?
Some scientists have speculated that the whales scare the sharks away with their smell.
So there's still a lot of questions. There's data coming in and you can't make any conclusions at this point of what's driving the sharks from a particular area.
Some scientists think shark predation by killer whales may be partially to blame. Sarah Andriotti argues that's not the whole story.
White sharks in South Africa used to be very, very abundant.
But when her team conducted a major shark spotting project around Falls Bay between 2009 and 2012, they documented fewer than 500 individual sharks, hardly enough to sustain the genetic diversity of the population.
We got shocked because there were supposed to be thousands of them.
To her, this was a clear indication of a shark population in steep decline, which Andriotti thinks can't be fully attributed to being chased out of the neighborhood by a couple of orcas. After all, the attacks started after the sharks began to disappear, and fewer sharks may have left an opening for other predators. So the whale-on-shark violence may be an effect, not a cause. She contends that the attacks are a smokescreen that conceals a larger, much more dangerous threat. The two-legged land-dwelling mammals, human beings.
A lot of attention now being spent looking into this orca behavior and away from the problem that caused the disappearance of white sharks from the area that are actually due to humans. These occurrences have been giving a very good excuse for the policymakers to say, well, if white sharks are not here, it's because the two orcas chased them out, forgetting the population had been declining for many, many years.
White sharks have been protected in South Africa since 1991, but shark nets are still used to keep them away from popular beaches.
The idea is the more shark you kill, the less the encounter with people. And they do that in the name of tourism and beach safety, but it is absurd.
Whale expert Elisa Schulman-Janiger agrees.
It catches indiscriminately. It doesn't only catch sharks. There were three different baby humpback whales caught in the last month or so. So this is a big problem.
Sarah Andriotti maintains that whatever threats great whites face in South Africa, the species is essential to the health of the ocean.
We've got to protect them. We need to enforce the law that are in place against poaching.
And unfortunately, it's not just in South Africa. Globally, white sharks and other shark species are on the decline, and the orcas face their own threats around the world. For example, even though they're adept at using echolocation, a form of sonar, to home in on their prey, for many years, the Navy also used underwater sonar to locate objects in the ocean, which, ironically, can harm whales if it's loud enough. It can interfere with whale hearing and affect navigation.
Sonar can confuse whales and has been known to drive, for example, beaked whales up on the beach, have been disoriented by that.
Fortunately, the Navy has cut back on sonar testing, but there are many other perils. For example, when killer whales eat large prey, they're also eating the contaminants that prey ate, and the contaminants their prey ate, and the contaminants, well, you know what I mean, all the way down the food chain. And then there are boats.
We have a couple killer whales that have been struck by boats, so there's a lot of dangers relating to humans.
The truth is, around the world, both killer whales and great white sharks have become vulnerable to extinction due to the actions of humans.
You cannot blame one animal for killing another animal, but I can very well blame bad politics and mismanagement for causing the demise of a species.
And also bad perception. Sharks have been especially vilified by society, even though shark attacks on people are very, very rare.
People are really afraid of sharks, but they're not out there to attack people.
In movies and pop culture, it seems like the shark is always cast as the bad guy, the one to fear. Think about it. In movies like Jaws, The Shallows, The Reef, even the Sharknado movies, those posters are all teeth and bikinis and blood. Sharks have gotten a bad rep, and it doesn't usually end well for them because we have a tendency to want to kill things that scare us. Shark expert Sarah Andriotti thinks they're just misunderstood.
They keep on portraying shark as this terrible monster, mindless killer, and they're nothing like that. You can't help to fall in love with these incredible animals. They're just beautiful.
Elisa Schulman-Janiger concurs.
Sharks aren't the demons.
And neither are killer whales.
Killer whales kill to feed their family, so there's no real true villain or hero. They are what they are, and they all deserve to stay alive and to be protected.
Wow, Kate, just so fascinating. We started with Donovan's video and found out there's so much more to this story. No wonder it generated such an enormous amount of interest.
That's right, Jan, and also not surprising, unfortunately, both sharks and killer whales face big threats from us humans.
Thanks for listening to the Roaring Earth Podcast. If you liked our show, please follow us on your favorite podcast app and share with your friends. Comments and reviews are greatly appreciated. For more info on today's episode, including videos and research, visit roaringearth.com. On our next episode, we'll learn why a sloth bear took on a tiger in India. It's based on an extraordinary video submitted to us featuring some of the rarest wildlife footage ever captured. Until then, send us your amazing wildlife videos so we can delve deeper into the story behind the incredible behaviors you may capture. The Roaring Earth Podcast was written and produced by Kate Morgan and Suzanne Bard. Sound engineering and original music was provided by Joe Biseri. Jan Renner and Glenn Hoffman are the executive producers. The National Park Service recorded the killer whale echolocation sounds. Special thanks to Elisa Shulman-Janiger, Sarah Andriotti, and Donovan Smith for their contributions. I'm Jan Renner for Roaring Earth.